We're not ready. Okay.
Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.penlive.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Gamma's Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello de Burgueses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Heber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
Dankota Biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiasts and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
That's fantastic. Great group. They're, I was going to say that they're happy to be indoors instead of out in the rain, but we didn't let them inside this time because they looked like a strange crowd. So there you go.
Good.
I didn't trust this crowd, but yes.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And you're letting them drink on top of it too. Oh boy.
outside wherever they may be. So welcome to the show. It's July the 3rd, if you're listening to us live. If not, it's some other date. But it's July the 3rd, one day before July 4th, obviously. And I had nowhere to go with that.
Yeah.
One of those things. So
one day before the independence of the United States.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
the old grade school joke, does Britain have July 4th? And no, well, yes, it does. It just doesn't celebrate it like we do, you know. So, but I think Canada celebrated their independence earlier this week or something like that too. I saw something on the news. So, any of you Canadian listeners out there, if I'm wrong, y'all, I'm sure you'll let me know. But I think Canada just celebrated their independence.
July 1st.
Was it July 1st? Okay.
I believe so. Celebrating the anniversary of July 1st, 1867.
Oh.
Is what it's National Day of Canada.
All right.
So.
I thought it was rather soon. That's cool. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
congratulations. Well, here we are. And no guests tonight, according to the recent information that I had. So it's Ron again, and as he's going to use... we're going to have some news and all kinds of stuff for you, so stay tuned. And if you want to join us on the air, give us a call on the guest line, and that's on the page. So there you go.
Yep.
Call us.
Call us.
Yep.
Operators are standing by.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is, although he's sitting by. welcome to the show tonight. I haven't gotten a guest from Texas. I'm going to do one more email out to Texas wineries, and if we don't get a guest within the next week or so, we are moving out of Texas and moving on to Virginia, which has a lot of wineries, actually. So those wineries in Virginia who have been waiting for me to get a hold of them, it is getting closer and closer. So don't give up. We will be talking to you soon. A lot of information, just trivia stuff, just, you know, oh, wow, I didn't know that stuff tonight. So we're going to pass this on to you, just different stuff that I've seen, and I always like to pass it on. So, hey, you can be informed, and that's what this program is all about, just talking about wine and wine-related stuff and anything. If you have any questions, anything that you want to talk about, any subject you want to talk about that we haven't covered, then let us know. You can always get in touch with us through the Gmail site. That's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And I check the Gmails all the time. And we'll be getting back with you or addressing your questions or whatever on the air. So let me know. I'll be more than happy to do that. First thing I'm going to start out with, I noticed just a couple of days ago in the recent issue of Packaging World, they're talking about, and let me get on my reading glasses for this one because I don't have my reading glasses on. There we go. It says, millennials looking for a new BYOW, bring your own wine, obviously alternative for single-serve wine consumption, can now select from among four varieties of single-serve wine in the 187-milliliter flexible spouted pouch. Sort of cool little thing here. It's in different and pretty little different colors. They have a green color here for a Sauvignon Blanc, orange for a Chardonnay, blue for a Malbec, and red for a red blend, which actually makes sense. It is the Nuvino line from, oh boy, my reading glasses really aren't helping me a whole heck of a lot tonight, Maravante, I believe it's pronounced, M-I-R-A-V-A-N-T-E, Maravante brands. And Cretec International has developed specifically for the 21 to 36-year-old crowd. The president of the company says it's making it fashionable to take wine with them, whether it's to an adventurous hike or relaxing on a beach. I don't know. Here in Florida, you're not supposed to have wine on the beach, but is that because of the bottles or is that because of alcohol? I don't know. I don't know what that rule actually applies to, if it's because of the alcohol or because of glass. I mean, I always follow that rule, but when I don't, I usually take it in something else besides the glass. He says that the company has developed a Nuvino, the company... president who developed Nuvino says the idea sprang from one of the previous commercial design innovators, the Valpar foldable, reusable water bottle. He says, I noticed the customers were using the pouch to transport wine to outdoor events, so I began to process of creating a convenient premium wine product in a single-serve, unbreakable pouch for the adventurous wine drinker. Which is a good idea, but 187, I mean, that's a single serve. That's just, well, it's 187 is about 6 ounces, 187 milliliters is about 6 ounces, so it's just something like that. It's a little over an actual serving, which is supposed to be 5. The pouch, comprising just 2% of the product's weight, versus a glass bottle, which makes up 30% of the weight, was also developed to address consumers' rising awareness of waste. It says, this appeals to someone who may want a single glass of wine but doesn't want to open an entire bottle. A cap on the spout pouch also makes the package resealable, allowing the consumer to keep unused product fresh. Now, if you're going to pour this into a glass, 187 milliliters is going to pretty much fill up a glass. And so I don't, you know, the pouch and keep it fresh idea is good, but I don't see how that would really appeal. The stand-up pouch is said to use Maravanti's four-layer preserve-a-pack film technology developed by a proprietary overseas film supplier. Construction includes two layers of nylon, one of aluminum, and one of polyethylene, and provides a minimum of 12 months of shelf life. Wow. Graphics for the pouch were produced in-house, and they were created with the bright colors to stand out and show five colors plus a muted gloss finish to stand out on the shelf. The wine itself is sourced globally, and the initial offering including premium varietals from Chile, South Africa, Argentina, and Australia. Wow. You can probably guess which one is each. Malbec, I would guess, from Argentina. The Sauvignon Blanc from, maybe Australia. South Africa does the Chardonnay and the red blend from Chile. I don't know. As of the press time, the wine is scheduled for retail launch at the start of summer 2014. And this is summer 2014, so it might be out there now. And it will be distributed by a partner, Cretec, a manufacturer and distributor of products to more than 100,000 C stores and top national retailers in the United States and Canada. Suggested retail price, $3.99 a pouch, which is rather expensive. When you look at that, it's rather expensive at $3.99 a pouch because that's $4 for a glass. There's 750 milliliters in it. Do the math. You're looking at, you know, $14-$15 for the thing, which, you know, I suppose you can justify that. If it's good wine, it won't be too bad. So that is coming out or is out on the shelves right now. So you might check that out and see what's going on. Mike is popping in and out here. You seem to be having problems there.
Yeah, I was just disconnected for no reason.
Yeah.
I was sitting here and that was it.
I know. I heard a boop, and I looked up, and you were gone. And I thought, oh, wow, well, maybe it was time for dinner.
Nope, I just keep calling back.
Well, if I see you disappear again, I'll know that it's a glitch. So check those out. If you find those on the stores and all that, check them out. I haven't seen any. I do visit wine shops and liquor stores really quite often, and I haven't noticed those on the shelf yet, but if you see them, then check it out or send me a review. Let me know what you think of them. Is wine speak nonsense? Stephen Beroy, Beroy, I believe it's pronounced B-E-A-U-R-O-Y. Stephen Beroy wrote an article. Is wine speak nonsense? He says. There's a Quino wine tasting app, Q-U-I-N-I, Quino wine tasting app, because, well, everybody wants to talk wine. Tasting notes that have provocatively vague descriptors like cut flowers, refer to rare fruit like mulberries, throw around figurative language like sexy, and summon up unexpected terms like tar or hamster's cage. Puzzle and amuse the uninitiated. Wine speaks extravagance even gives some experts conniptions. I just read an article. I'm working my way through a book right now, written by some scholars, I guess you could call them, addressing different parts of the wine experience. And the one I just finished was the one on smell, and he was talking about smell and how I'm sorry, not smell, but taste. He had a big section on smell and how we associate smells with different things. And we can, when we smell something, we can picture stuff, and it's just the way the nose works. But the taste is so tied into the smell, but it is so subjective because the taste buds only detect six basic flavors, and so therefore you're trying to associate it. It was an interesting thing. He made some good points. I'm not going to quote anything because I don't have it highlighted like I always do on this particular book yet. I was just, you know, scanning through it and reading some stuff that caught my eye. But I will talk about some of that later. Not tonight, but at a later time. A Jonathan Nodister, for example, declares wine speak ludicrously overwrought. Silence about a wine that moves you might be sweetest, he suggests. In a classic essay on wine, the New York writer Adam Gopnik also develops a critical take. He says that the scene from Orwell's 1984, where Winston is speechless with disappointment over his first taste of wine. For Gopnik, wine speak, like Orwell's news speak, determines experience, increase the wine we drink. Without wine jargon, wine would all be about the same or taste that way, he said. So wine speak actually differentiates the wine. He is saying that like babies and animals, we perceive and discriminate outside of language. Without wine speak, good wine remains redolent of individuality. I have addressed this a little bit before, and I'll make a couple of quick comments here before I go on this. Wine speak gets a little bit ridiculous, and we all know that. Everybody that's involved with wine knows how it can get silly at times, you know, in describing some of the stuff and things like that. And it does, but, you know, maybe that's the best way to describe it. The thing is, when you start mentioning certain things in wines and what you're smelling and what you're tasting, it's all experience. And this is the example I use to tell people and try to educate people about. If you've never smelled diesel gasoline, if you've never smelled diesel gasoline, then you can't relate to that smell. It's as simple as that. So if you pick up a glass of wine and someone says, "Ooh, I'm smelling diesel," you can't, because you don't know what that smells like. They can describe it and say, "Well, this is what diesel smells like," but not really, because wine's not going to smell, you know, like a can of diesel gasoline. So, or diesel fuel, I should say, not gasoline, for you purists out there, because it's not gasoline, it's fuel. But when you smell stuff, it's only if you have smelled that before that you can relate to that smell. And I think wine speak gets a little bit crazy on some of these things. Like, you know, this is, you know, smells like mulberries. Well, okay, that's wonderful, but what does a mulberry smell like? I mean, is it a fruity smell? And the same thing with a lot of other stuff. I mean, this smells like strawberries. Well, is that like strawberries fresh picked off the vine, which not everyone has that experience? Is it like strawberries that have been sitting in the little tray at your local grocery? Is it like strawberries in a strawberry shortcake or a strawberry pie? And these are all different levels of strawberries. So wine speak can get overbearing, if you will, at times. If you're around people who don't understand it and can't relate to it, they, I think, feel somewhat inferior, for lack of a better word, which is really sad, because in wine, we unwittingly do that. Those of us who are into wine and talk about wine and all that unwittingly try not to, but just by saying some of these words, tend to talk down to other people. It goes on. Gopnik depends on neuroscientists who disparage human olfaction or smell. As neuroscientist Gordon Shepherd observes, it's not true that we're terrible at olfaction or describing flavors. We improve if we practice, given the plasticity of our brains. Inhale the fragrance of fresh raspberries, say, then turn away. Doesn't it get easier to merely imagine that flavor the more you do it? Shepherd speculates that language originates in the description of flavor around the cooking fires of early humanity. Therefore, the Quine Wine Tasting app also suggests wine speak is natural and isn't nonsense. Quine is curious to hear what you think about this, so let us know, he goes on to say. Wine Speak blog, if you'd like to check this out, and I haven't, but if you'd like to check this out, it's http://blog.quinewine, Quinewine.com /author/Stephan, Stephane, /QUINI, again, line and opening wine. And it's a blog, and he talks about this stuff and all that. So if you want to check it out, check it out. But, you know, wine speak, I don't know. It tends to get carried away, and people are always searching for words to describe stuff. And it's great and wonderful, but some of the words that are used to describe wine, and I've heard some really far-fetched words to describe wine, and I don't know. But I won't go on with that. But wine speak, if you have any comments on it, by all means, let me know. I will be happy to address them in future shows here. But if you are confused and bewildered by some of the words that are used in wines, and if you think it should be simpler and easier, and I don't know how to do that, or maybe, you know, an app that goes into some of this stuff. I don't know. That's an interesting concept. I'm going to have to check out that app to see. Quine Wine app. I'm going to have to check it out and see what that says, because maybe there is words or things in there that we can use that would, you know, help it. Oh, geez. And I was rambling for a second there because I was trying to get my next program or my next thing I was going to talk about to load here. And instead of loading, it decided to back up a little bit. Oh, there we go. Something that I saw here, where is it? Texas, a few things here. Texas drought recedes a little, but many reservoirs remain low. We know that the drought is still a problem. This is what caught my eye. This is something here that we have to be concerned about. The glassy winged sharpshooter. Now, I've talked about the glassy winged sharpshooter. Glassy winged sharpshooter is the carrier of the Pierce disease. I have talked about it before, but let me address it again here. Pierce disease is a disease that gets into it. It's a bacterial disease that gets into the grapevines and kills them. If there's no cure, it will kill the grapevines. And it is usually spread, and while it is always spread, by the glassy-winged sharpshooter. And the glassy-winged sharpshooter is one of two in the sharpshooter family that actually flies. So it flies into the vineyard, eats the grapevines, infects it, and flies away. Because of that, it's impossible to spray for them. It's impossible to eradicate them just, you know, whenever you want to or whenever you need to kill them, because of the four cycles, and some of the sprays don't work on certain phases of the bugs and stuff like that. And we don't need to talk about all that. But agricultural officials rejected a nursery load at a Napa, California retailer after it was discovered that there was glassy-winged sharpshooter egg masses on two of the crepe myrtle trees shipped from San Diego. Wow. That is a serious problem. That is a serious problem. If those get into Napa, that could be as bad as the outbreak of phylloxera in France in late 1800s. The nursery stock was returned to the original nursery, and the egg masses were destroyed. Entomologists with the California Department of Food and Agriculture verified the viability of the egg masses. They were alive and well. The announcement from Napa Ag Commissioner Greg Clark highlights the county's proactive efforts to keep out the glass-winged sharpshooter and to protect the wine industry, which last year in Napa alone was valued at $656.2 million just in grape sales alone. So there's a little bit of number for you here. They've been successful keeping the GWSS, or the glass-winged sharpshooter, out of Napa County for 14 years, and the recent discoveries have made them be even more cautious of shipments and everything else coming into the county. The assistant ag commissioner says that Napa's vigilance is a matter of major importance, especially checking nurseries and other things coming into the county. This shipment did not originate from a quarantine zone, so it was not detected until they got to Napa. Said the local grape growers have assessed themselves from GWSS protection based on vineyard production. They have a lot of concern about the glass-winged sharpshooter and are very aggressive about the approach. Spreads Pierce disease, which, like I said, is a bacterial disease which kills grapevines. There is no known cure for Pierce disease. Adult sharpshooters are strong flyers which can lay eggs in the vineyard. GWSS prefers to feed on a variety of plants, increasing the likelihood that it can pick up and spread the disease. So, if they're shipping those things out and they're shipping them around like that and they're finding it, egg masses, you know, it's a scary thing because the glass-winged sharpshooter is prevalent in Florida and the warmer climates. We've talked to people in other warmer climates and they've mentioned Pierce disease, and it is a major problem in the warm climates in the United States and around. And global warming is, and the world is getting warmer. Global warming can cause them to move further north at any time or all the time. So this is an issue also. And as soon as this loads, I will go on to my next subject here. And this one is about Colorado wines. We didn't talk to Colorado wineries. Actually, that was back before we actually started to call everybody that I was talking to them and telling you about them on that. Next time, and we will start going through the alphabet again and talking to more wineries. When we do that, we will be talking to Colorado wineries and a lot of the ones we missed at the beginning there. But this is about Colorado. It says, Colorado wine industry is all growing up. This is out of the Denver Post. It is said, Warren Wynarski knows something about blind tastings. He was his 1973 Stag's Leap Wine Cellars Cabernet Sauvignon won the red wine category. And another Californian, Chateau Montalina Chardonnay, won the white wine category in the Judgment of Paris in 1976. That was the one that they did the Bottle Shock movie on, and that was a fascinating time in California. I lived there at the time, and I knew a lot of the winemakers and all that. And the feeling in the air was just bubbly. I mean, the whole Napa Valley was buzzing because of the Judgment of Paris. The French wine experts were outraged over all this, but Napa Valley was just buzzing. I mean, buzzing was, you know, just giggly because of what had happened. And not unlike right now, the Hill Country of Texas. And the Hill Country of Texas is giggling and buzzing right now, too, because of being named one of the top 10 wine regions in the world by Wine Enthusiast magazine. So, you know, they have a reason to. But a bottle of that wine is now in the Smithsonian Institute, part of the 101 Objects That Made America America in the World collection. It was Winorski's second harvest, and he had no idea the wine had been submitted to an important contest in Paris. The next day, I knew they'd had a wine tasting that we had won, but I was underwhelmed. I didn't know who was tasting, says the 84-year-old winemaker. But it broke the glass ceiling, the idea that great wines could only be made in France. He goes on, but at the time that influential win, Winorski was in his 30s. Actually, I knew him, too. I knew a lot of the people out there then. I used to write an article for a local paper, and I knew a lot of people in Napa, and Winorski was one of them that I used to visit with and talk to quite often when I was up there and visit Napa. He's in his 30s, studying in Paris and making wines and stuff like that. The Midwestern sobriety took hold after the wonderful habits of Italy until, he says, one day an East Coast bought a bottle of wine to a luncheon at the University of Chicago. He said it was a moment of illumination, an epiphany, when wine really was, really spoke to me. At that moment, I loosened my tie to an academic career, and I had to find a way to make wine. And he continued on to make wine and pursue the wine and pursue the career. But first he had to convert the prune orchard to a vineyard, and he had no idea what he was doing on that. And he continued to pursue that. It says in 2007 he sold the winery, and also Chatel St. Michel Wine Estates, and decided to go elsewhere and look elsewhere. He says he has to exercise his musician, his abilities to make wine. He says you only have a short time to do that before that is gone. The beauty of those skins and everything disappear. And he was telling this to a group of young Colorado winemakers. He says after the combination of art and science for making grapes is something that you can find in just certain grapes around the world. And he said that Colorado has that ability. Colorado has some great wine possibilities. After the judgment of Denver, Winorski and 17 other judges tasting only 100 wines said he was amazed and astounded in the fact that the quality of some of the wines in the Colorado area. He said it was like a brand new discovery, finding the qualities of the wines coming out of Colorado. It reminded him of a young California of 25, 30 years ago. And so it is, he goes on to praise it and all that. But he was the one that made some wonderful wines and set the French back on their heels back in the mid-70s. So he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. And he's saying Colorado wines are the ones that are popping up. As we've said before, and I always like to repeat and always like to point out, one of the sad things is with all these state wines that you find all over like this is that you don't find them anywhere else. That's it. Whatever state they're made in, most of the time, they're all sold in that state, and you're pretty much impossible to find in any other state or anywhere else. We have found that to be so down here in Florida, although Florida is allowing a lot of shipment in, which is good, but still, it's a sad thing that we can't get more wines shipped around the country. Yay, freethegrapes.org. Maybe they can continue to pursue their quest and get shipping all over the country. Virginia is going to be our next state. Virginia wineries have tripled in the past decade, the number of wineries. They have exploded there. There's lots and lots of wineries there. Sebastian Zutant, the co-founder of Red Hen Winery, or Red Hen Restaurant, popular capital Washington, D.C. restaurant, says that people don't understand that within a day's drive, they are in their own Sonoma and Napa areas when they go to Virginia, just really down the highway from Washington. There are some great wineries all over in Virginia, as there are a lot in Maryland, too. Let's, you know, not just, you know, discredit that. But Virginia has a tremendous amount of wineries that are really quite well-known and all that in the area. In the past decade, they've increased from around 78 wineries to over 250. It's exploded there. That will be our next state that we will be talking to. It's going to be Virginia wineries. So I just wanted to point that out, that there are a lot of wineries in Virginia right now that are operating and opening and doing. I had an article here that was talking about wines to go with the World Cup, but then the United States lost. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a soccer fan. You know, God bless you all out there who are soccer fans. I just never have gotten into it. I just never have, you know, seen the joy of watching the game. So I've never been a soccer fan. But there was a great article on World Cup. But since the United States lost, I won't go into the wines that would be good for the World Cup, because, hey, if you're still watching it, you're probably cheering for other countries and stuff like that, too, and they all have their own wines that you will be enjoying and not the ones that are on this list. Top 10 Old Vine Zinfandel Vineyards. Interesting little list here. Great Zinfandel is made in the vineyard. The quality of the Zinfandel is almost always correlated with the age of the vineyard, from where it was harvested and where it grew. This is probably more prevalent in California than anywhere else, because that's where most of the Zinfandel vineyards are. Some of these date back to the turn of the 20th century, some of the vineyards there. An old vineyard, an old Zinfandel vineyard, I like old Zins. I like the whole old harvest myself, but there is a debate on the fact of, is it any better? Is it really any better? As the grapevine gets older, the yield drops. But if the yield drops, does that make a better grape? If it's not producing 1,000 grapes and it's only producing 250, then is the quality not dispersed among 1,000 but only 250? Does that make a better grape? When it comes to Zin, I think so. I don't know. The debate is out there saying yes, it does. No, it doesn't. I won't get into the debate. I think it does. But here's a list of 10 of the old vine vineyards. Now, this is the Historic Vineyard Society has put this list together, the Historic Vineyard Society of California, and most of these vineyards are registered at the Historic Vineyard Society and are planted in fields that are Zinfandels, and some other grapes are also planted with them. But the first one, Old Hill Ranch, this vineyard dates back to the 1880s and is currently a fruit source for Ravenswood and Buckland. Old Hill Ranch, 1880s, that's pretty good. Hain Vineyard, this is a vineyard was planted in 1902 and 1903 and is located on the west side of St. Helena at the base of Spring Mountain. Hain Vineyard Zinfandel goes to Turley and Carlisle and Chase, those three vineyards. Monte Rosso was planted in the 1880s. Emmanuel Goldstein and the original winery is still on the property. It's located off Highway 12 in Sonoma, and the grapes are being used by Carlisle, Bedrock, Louis Martini, and Robert Bell. Papera Ranch. Papera Ranch is located on the eastern side of the Laguna de Santa Rosa in the Russian River AVA of Sonoma County. The vineyard is named for the Charlie Papera, who planted the vines in 1934. The fruit is used by Williams Selim, Carlisle, Bedrock, and Novi. N-O-V-Y. I'm not familiar with that winery. Pagani Ranch. The vineyard is just off Highway 12 in the Glen Ellen area of Sonoma County. Angela and Felix Pagani came to Sonoma County from Italy, purchased the property, and planted the vineyard in the early 1900s. The fruit goes to Ridge, Bedrock, Carlisle, and St. Francis. Carlisle, look at, their name comes up on us every one of these. Geez, I mean, a Carlisle old vine zen might be something to check out here. Uberth Vineyard, owned by the ex-commissioner of baseball, Peter Uberth, the limestone vineyard is situated on the west side of Paso Robles. Uberth is the oldest vineyard in the Appalachian, having been planted in 1885. Shirley has made Uberth Vineyard Zinfandel since 2002. Montavi Ranch, formerly the Tom Feeney Vineyard, was planted in 1926 and sits on the Santa Rosa city limits. The vineyard is mostly Zinfandel, but does contain a healthy amount of Alicante Boche and Grand Nord de la Calmette. The fruit goes to Carlisle. There we go again. Bedrock Vineyard, the site formerly known as Madrone Ranch, was first planted in 1854. Senator George Hurst purchased the property in 1888 and planted most of the vines that exist to this day. Located in the Sonoma Valley, the vineyard is a fruit source for Ravenswood, Carlisle, and Bedrock. Carlisle Vineyard. Carlisle Vineyard was planted in 1927 on the eastern bench of the Laguna de Santa Rosa floodplain. Both sides of the Laguna were popular for settlement by Italian immigrants in the early 1900s. Carlisle, of course, and Novi used the fruit. And number 10, Lime Rock Lane Vineyard. The property just south of Hillsburg at the end of Lime Rock Lane. The vineyard was planted around 1910 by Mario de la Feva and has only been farmed by three families in the last 100 years. The fruit goes to Lime Rock Lane, Carlisle, and Bedrock. This concludes by saying this list is entirely subjective. He says, struggled with leaving vineyards like Dickerson, Bellani, Martinelli Road, Jackass Hill, Forcini, and Lytton Estate off the list. Since it's subjective, I like to hear what people have to say. So if you have comments on that, let me know. I'll pass it on to the author here of this particular article. But old vine zins are very good. I've always been a big fan of old vine zins.
The Carlisle Winery and Vineyards website I found, they list, if you go to vineyards, they list the vineyards that they buy the fruit from.
Right.
And it says, we source fruit from some of the oldest, or from some of the finest old vine Sonoma County vineyards planted between 1885 and 1952. And then for some of the other varieties that they have, they work with small family growers who share the passion for great wine. And then they list all these different vineyards that they buy from. And it's like Russian River Valley, Dry Creek Valley, Paso Robles, Bennett Valley, Knights Valley, Sonoma Valley, and from those locations. There's just quite a big list there with links to the individual information, I guess. So, yeah, it's quite a lot there.
Does it say... the site say anything about their old vine zins? Anything about what they're costing or anything?
What they're costing?
Yeah. Do they have prices listed?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is 2012 Zinfandel, let's see, Dry Creek, Russian River Valley. Yeah, I can see if there's any price on it. It gives alcohol content of one of them. It lists a whole bunch. So it's like 89% Zin, 11% mixed black varieties. Alcohol is 15.4%. 661 cases of this one. Suggested retail, $46.
Whoa.
That was from the Sonoma County Russian River Valley Zinfandel Montafi Vineyard. So that's just one. And it goes on.
And I'm sure they have lots of them. I mean, with all the places they source.
Yeah, it's quite a big list. It has a Bedrock Vineyard would be $43, 15.8% alcohol. That's a Bedrock Vineyard from Carlisle. It's quite a bit.
Well, they're located in Sonoma, or are they located in Napa?
For Carlisle, they are Santa Rosa, California is their mailing address.
Santa Rosa.
We'll have to get them on the show.
Yeah, really.
We'll see what the deal is.
I'm gonna have to pursue that. Make myself a note right now. Carlisle Winery.
CarlisleWinery.com. Yeah. It's pretty cool. All right.
Thank you. Excessive drinking kills 1 in 10 Americans. 10% of Americans will die due to alcohol abuse this year, adding up to millions of years of lost life. If people moderated their alcohol intake and avoided excessive drinking, it would prevent 10% of the deaths that occur in this country every year in people between the ages of 20 and 64, tallying up to total potential years of life lost annually due to alcohol-related deaths that reaches a total of 2.5 million years. The Center for Disease Control, CDC, released a study just recently stating that for some of these conditions, like motor vehicle collisions due to intoxication or cirrhosis of the liver, mortality could be attributed entirely to the effects of alcohol. For other conditions, such as high blood pressure or breast cancer, the deaths related to alcohol were calculated using risk estimates for developing the different diseases based on varying levels of intake. Survey and study. Those who die prematurely are overwhelmingly 71% male, and over half die as a direct result of binge drinking. They said that though still lagging behind tobacco use, poor nutrition, and sedentary lifestyles on the list of preventable causes of death in our country, excessive drinking leads to the cumulative loss of millions of years of potential human life. It just goes on. It's a sobering fact. And it all boils down to this. If you're wine drinkers, drink responsibly. If you're wine drinkers, don't abuse it. If you're wine drinkers, social drinking is great and it's wonderful, but be careful. Don't drink and drive. We got a holiday weekend coming up here, and it's a good opportunity to take this time to say, please drink responsibly and don't get out there and driving. There's going to be lots and lots of old cars on the road this next 3 or 4 days. And so please, please be careful, be prudent, and be cautious with your drinking and driving. Whether it's alcohol in the form of beer, wine, liquor, whatever, and be cautious of others on the road, too. We like you as our listeners, and so we don't want to lose you. But just a sobering little thing there I saw on this drinking and thought was a rather timely thing concerning what's coming up this weekend, our long weekend. El Nino is coming to U.S. They're predicting El Nino. This coming to the U.S., which is going to affect the weather patterns all over the country, like it always does. And we're already seeing part of it here, the hurricane forming off our coast and heading up the east coast of the United States. El Nino is a sustained warming, if you don't know what it is, and everybody's probably heard of all this stuff, but it's a sustained warming of sea surface temperatures in the equatorial Pacific. La Nina occurs when those temperatures are in a cooler phase. So El Nino conditions exist when those average sea surface temperatures are at least a half a degree Fahrenheit warmer than normal. Half a degree is not much, but that's all it takes. For five consecutive three-month periods, while they're blaming the drought in the West for the La Nina, the El Nino is supposed to bring cooler temperatures and increased precipitation. Hopefully that it will stop some of the drought we're having. But the intensity of the El Nino will be a major deterrent in temperatures and precipitation amounts regionally in the United States. It will affect throughout the country. The likely factor for agriculture in the United States this year, it's hard to really predict, but it is building and it is an El Nino. Everything you ever need to know about El Nino is available online. You can always look it up. There's 70% chance likelihood that we will be shifting into El Nino, says meteorologist Jeff Duran. And in fact, we may already be in the beginning phases. The question really is, how long will it last? And it will affect weather. They're looking at weather patterns, droughts in the West continuing, and precipitation in the South above normal. And the effect on agriculture, which is grapes, by the way, more temperatures across the board can be, more moderate temperatures can be expected with El Nino. Pretty decent news for the ag business, because it would be less extreme heat. Significant differences in precipitation depending on the strength of it. With weak conditions, you probably won't see as much precipitation, be more normal. Moderate to strong classification, however, means that much more of the chance of increased precipitation in the Midwest and West. Moderate El Nino would be better for the Corn Belt with more moisture in the Midwest. It's been dry. It's been rather dry in Missouri, in Iowa, and Kansas, and Nebraska, all the corn-growing areas there. I know. I'm from there. I talk to people. And they can use a good, decent year. Corn is, I don't know if the corn's doing well this year or not. I haven't, I think it's up to, I was saying is up to an Indian eye by the 4th of July, and that's not a any more than just a comment that has been around for years. Up to a person's eye would work just as well by the 4th of July. So it's, you know, so the corn's growing well, then it's doing well. I don't know what's going on this year. But the West will benefit by getting some more rains. And the winter could benefit with increased snowpack and providing moisture throughout the year. So El Nino could be a good thing if it doesn't go overboard in some areas. I've seen considerable sea surface warming over the last 3 months, but we can't tell well right now. If the El Nino comes in, it could get us out of the La Nina and alleviate some of the major droughts we're having all over this country. So they're predicting that to hit us pretty soon here, which, that's a good thing. And that's not the one I wanted to read. So and there was something else I wanted to address before we go here. As soon as I can find it. We have a tick-tock, no. there we go, thank you.
Yeah. One of those things.
Well, this web page is not available. Yeah. Why is this web page not available? I've been using this, and all of a sudden it just says it's not available. Oh, well. Well, it's a good time to end anyway. I've pretty much talked enough today about different things and a few controversial things, so if anybody has any comments, let me know. I think a lot of people don't let me know what's going on, what their comments are and all that, simply because they're listening to this at different times and they get upset and then let it go. Irene King let me know, and thanks, Irene, for that. But here's something else that I found what I wanted to talk about. One more thing here. Massachusetts, a couple of things. Massachusetts is close to shipping wine out of state and shipping it into Massachusetts. They've been one of the holdouts for a long time. They're getting close to opening it up there. California wildfires are threatening some wine country homes, and they're getting a little concerned. Over 200 homes in Napa County are being forced to evacuate because of wildfires out there. And, you know, the amount of money for those homes, we've talked about that. That's an issue. You start getting those homes, that's a major issue. So that's happening there. Plus, they're finding a European grapevine moth in Sonoma County. The Detection and Agriculture Department there says immediately deployed traps at the rate of 100 traps per square mile to get a good idea of what's going on. And they're doing surveys for the European grapevine moth eggs and larvae. And so far the results have been negative, but they have detected some, and it's enough to put them in full "we need to stop this" mode. So serious problem if it is their serious problem. So that's out of the University of California Agricultural Newsletter that's sent out. So that's it for this evening. Everyone have a safe and wonderful 4th of July. If you're listening to this before the weekend, if you're listening to it after the weekend, hope you had a safe and wonderful 4th of July.
Yeah, definitely. And don't drink and drive. And, as you said, but also that includes boating. If you're in an area where you go out on the lake or river in the Gulf or coast or whatever, don't get behind the wheel of a boat and drink impaired. None of that stuff. So keep it safe out there this weekend.
Good point. It never fails.
Every year around this time.
Yeah,
there's going to be somebody. So there you go. All right, and we want you all to return with us next Thursday, July the 10th. So don't miss it, and be here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time and with another All About Wine. So be safe, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in, and y'all have a great week and a great holiday. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/ Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.